Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome into the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm Bill Bartholomew. Today, we're breaking down Rhode Island's new budget with Uprise Rhode Island Steve Alquist, who offers keen insight into some of the legislation that was passed and some of the programmatic elements of this budget, and also some of the things that were left out. We recorded this just about an hour and a half before Governor McKee signed the budget up at the State House. And, you know, there's so much that we could get into and we could go so far into the weeds, but I think Steve did a really good job of just sort of outlining, hey, here's what you should know, here's what you should care about and focus in on. One other thing I will say as well is, you know, you probably have seen the video footage that I posted of now former GOP state Senate candidate punching Jen Rourke in the face at the State House on Friday night. I'm trying to give that a little space. I am going to react to it in detail here on the podcast. I'll have an interview with Jen one-on-one, just sort of letting this play itself out. It's become an international story. It's been on just about every news outlet and continues to air. Even just a few moments ago, I'm told it's continuously airing on most of the cable outlets and even the network TVs and so on and so forth. So a horrendous situation that took place on Friday night at the State House. I'm going to react to it in greater detail and again, speak with Jen coming up soon. But I don't know what else to say. The video speaks for itself. You know, a lot of people trying to discredit Jen. People are trying to discredit me. The video speaks for itself. Take a look at it. If you haven't seen it yet, just go to my Twitter at Bill Bartholomew and give it a look. It's got about 5 million views as of right now, just on Twitter alone. And the world has seen it. You draw your own conclusion. What happened there? It's pretty obvious what happened. And it's insane. Literally insane to me that anybody would try to divert the narrative away from what actually happened into some kind of sidebar conspiracy theory nonsense. But that's the world we live in, folks, and I think that's what this video is emblematic of. This is it. This is where we've arrived. It's an embarrassing, disgraceful, horrific encapsulation of where we have arrived. And I'll react to it more later this week. Right now, Steve Alquist breaking down the new state budget here on Rhode Island's podcast of record, Bartholomew Town. All right, so we are here with the one and only Steve Alquist, Uprise Rhode Island reporter extraordinaire, and somebody who, as much as anybody, and certainly a lot more than most people, keeps an eye on the State House, keeps an eye on things happening inside government and inside the General Assembly. So we're at a point, we're recording this on the morning just before the budget is going to be signed. So let me just throw this basic question out there, Steve. Your take on this year's budget?
Yeah, this year's budget is one of the better ones from the point of view of, let's say, the left in Rhode Island. A lot of good stuff got passed this year that was both in the budget and not in the budget. But the other side of it is, of course, no one's completely 100% satisfied. And I think in light of the ruling on Friday with the Supreme Court overturning Roe, many people were sad to see that the Equality and Abortion Coverage Act was not passed. And that's really too bad.
Yes. Yeah. That's a major, major loss in a lot of ways.
It really was. And I think what happened there was I was at the House talking to Shikarchi 2 days before the session ended. And I asked him specifically, are you intending to do something about this? And he said, it's too late. There's nothing we can do. You know, he was kind of being evasive. He kind of blamed the governor for not including the budget in the first place. So that happening was a major disappointment. I will say that just this weekend, I found out that the budget office here just got around to attaching a fiscal note to the EACA, and it comes out to roughly $500,000. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the money we kind of, I'm not going to say gave away, but the money we eliminated when we did things like the car tax, right? Not even close to $500,000. That's like multi-millions of dollars. And we did a lot of different things this year with money that we came in from all sorts of different places, and we had a huge budget overrun. We didn't really, we could have easily afforded to do the EACA, turns out.
What else is on your radar as far as things that should be noted and praised specifically and things mm-hmm. that were left out that you are concerned about at minimum?
Yeah, I think the housing, the raft of housing bills that passed that are both in the budget and not in the budget mm-hmm. are interesting. There's no way to know what kind of effect they will have. And there's no real immediate effect they're going to have on housing anyway, because it's going to take time to build up, time to see the different processes and the different chairs they moved around to see how they affect the housing situation. So we're still years away from a solution for housing. And they passed maybe a quarter of the bills necessary to really deal with it comprehensively. And this is by, I think, the speaker's own admission. I think even he would say there's a lot more work to be done here. Another really important part of this was the various ways they tried to extend relief to different people in the state. For instance, the elimination of the car tax, as it stands right now, goes primarily to high-income people, because the car tax has already been eliminated on low-income people's cars. If you don't have a car or your car is worth under $4,000, you weren't paying taxes anyway. So this car tax was only for cars over a certain amount. So that was kind of the giveaway for the wealthier Rhode Islanders. For the poor Rhode Islanders, there was money for health services. Let me find this the right one. Economic relief for families with children. And what they did was they have a tax credit that's going out. It's going to be for families with children. And that will be very helpful to lower income people or anybody with children. There was also elimination of taxes for veterans, or some taxes for veterans, disabled people. And there was also what I want to say is none of these tax cuts have affected people like me, for instance, who
yeah.
have adult children, and my car is worth well under $4,000 and when I use it at all. And so none of these are there for, I would say, middle. There's a little bit, but not a lot there for middle income people. But they did try to hit everybody, somebody at every level. And I think that was both a positive and a negative, because I don't know that we have to hit people at a higher income in the state all the time. Whenever we say, hey, let's do a tax cut for people who are poor, we don't always have to do a tax cut for people who are rich as well. I think that's kind of a silly idea. Like, if you have $1 million and I give you $10, it means nothing. If you have $0 and I give you $10, it means a lot, right?
Yeah.
So I think when we do things like that, we've got to think through a little bit better. There's infrastructure investments, of course, that are good. There's a lot of environmental bills. And, you know, I was talking to Shikarchi, like I said, and he said, how come you never give me credit for anything? I will give him credit, because we passed some important wind energy legislation. We passed some bans on PFAS, right, which has been in and out of here for a long, long time. And we did not pass a bill to bring the pyrolysis plant, which is that plastic burning technology, to Rhode Island, right?
Yes, huge.
Huge deal. It was a crazy bill. It was going to literally eliminate the need for the state to oversee the way these things are built. And it was going to prevent individual communities, like if you live in Cranston or Warwick or wherever, somebody could build one of these in your local communities could do nothing about it. Nothing.
Right.
Right. It was crazy, because we're going to spill. And there was great testimony on this, by the way, where somebody said, I opened up a panel at one of these things in California, stuck my head in and took a deep whiff, and it didn't have any effect on me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy just inhaled all these plastic fumes and said, oh, no, it's fine. And I'm like, that is not a really great way to do it. What else do I have here? I have driver's licenses for undocumented. Right?
Huge, 20 right? Years. Massive. Yeah. Even Blake Filippi massive. Getting and, involved. Yeah.
Right. Not part of the budget, but still has a budget impact on average Rhode Islanders. This is going to affect your insurance rates, which theoretically will go down, or at least not go up more. as a result of this, and it's going to eliminate, they think, a lot of hit and runs and people driving off after accidents and stuff because they're afraid of being arrested. And it gives people a legal means to get around to the state, so they'll be able to help their own income, and that means they'll have more money and they'll be able to spend money at local businesses. And that's just a win-win-win for economics in general. Another really big transportation deal is the free R line RIPTA bus service.
Huge, right? One.
I think,
yep.
I believe, you know, here's the thing. When I first heard it's only the R line, I thought, well, what is that? Like a quarter of the state. Turns out that's more than half the rides on RIPTA are on the R line. So that's like 52%, 51% in that area. So this is half of RIPTA right now is free. And the R line runs from Attleboro, basically, all the way into Warwick, deep into Warwick. So it's a pretty long route. And it's used, like I said, half the riders use it. And making that free, starting in September for a one-year test, if it goes well, they might open up the other half to free. And we'd have free bus service in the state. And we'd be the first state in the entire country to offer free buses for everyone in the state. There are certain municipalities, cities, and towns that do it, but we'd be free for everyone. And the impact of that can't be overstated. The other aspect of the free buses is that they want to make them all electric. And that's a really big deal too. So, yeah. So as far as emissions dropping and people being able to get places, and just if you're going back and forth on the bus to work every day, that can, if you're paying out of pocket, that's like $2 there, $2 back, $4 a day, $20 a week. That adds up to a lot of money when you're basically at a job that you need to take the bus to get to, right? So if you're working at a restaurant somewhere, washing dishes or doing janitorial services, that $20 a week can be a big, big deal. So really, really something. I thought that was great, and I'm hoping to see it go statewide. I really do.
I completely agree. And I think it's also, you know, you think about the moment where so many people would like to make the shift to a public transit type of lifestyle because of gas prices and just the general sentiment surrounding gasoline in general and gas and cars and whatnot. But it's so difficult. So the more steps we take in improving public transit, there's no question that is a highly positive thing. I'll ask you this as well. So the lot of turnover, there is turnover from time to time, of course, every year, not from time to time, every session there's turnover, but every election year there's turnover. Mm-hmm. There are some big names. We just saw Senator McCaffrey is out, Blake Filippi leaving. That changes the dynamics of the Republican Party a lot of ways. There's plenty of others. Where do you see the legislative bodies right now in terms of, you know, just moving forward, some of the old guard shifting? Do you think that's a good opportunity for the General Assembly, or are you concerned that some allies may have left on some of these key issues and that might open up some vulnerabilities?
Yeah, I think both those things you said are true. It's really going to be hard to understand what the impacts of these people leaving is going to be. Like we said just before we started recording about McCaffrey, Jen Rourke is not necessarily going to win that seat because Michael McCaffrey may have a successor picked out who's going to file papers over the next 3 days and get a lot of support from Michael McCaffrey, who still has a sizable, let's say, war chest, right, for making a for running for office. So he could put a lot of money into certain campaigns. Blake Filippi, I don't know exactly why he left. I think he's a person who always thought that term limits were a relatively good idea. Maybe he thought 8 years is enough. Maybe he feels that some of the people that the Republican Party has moved too far right. Remember, he never joined as Republican. He joined as an independent.
That's right.
Right. In fact, he had libertarian leanings at one point, which I think he may have given up on as he kind of came out like anti-abortion and stuff, because I don't know that there are many pro-life libertarians are. I mean, the overlap there is a little bit less than you might think.
Yes.
And then for some of the other people who are leaving, Kendra Anderson, who just told me she's tired of being here and it was too much work. And, you know, and she's a staunch progressive vote in the Senate. These are difficult. So the other aspect that I don't think we're paying attention to is redistricting. Huge redistricting in this state, just like basically give superpowers to all the incumbents, right? Their districts are stronger for them than they ever were before. So when we think of a race like Lenny Seo running against the Senate president, all the neighborhoods he won are no longer in his district. And all the neighborhoods that Dominic Ruggiero won are still in the district. So Lenny has to make his case now in all the neighborhoods that he lost within his district and reach out to whole new neighborhoods that he never had to talk to before. That's kind of crazy. And that kind of power of redistricting really gives incumbents a lot of power and a lot of ability to fend off challengers. So I don't know that I never thought from the beginning of this year, from watching the redistricting very closely, I never thought that progressives or outsiders were going to make a huge dent in the General Assembly. But then so many people decided not to run. I was like really surprised. And then like Blake Flippy, maybe the bigger surprise, because he had a Democrat challenger first time in his life. He's had a challenger.
Yeah.
And so when he stepped down, I was like, well, that kind of opens the door for her, because I don't know that anybody else is going to make a big Republican case there to one, or an independent case. I think she's got a pretty open door at this point, I think.
Yeah, most certainly. And it's a district that I grew up in. And, you know, it makes sense that an independent would win there, because it does seem to be a socially liberal but fiscally conservative, whatever that thing is, type of place. You know, if that even exists. Exactly. Last question here, and I appreciate your time as always. The great Steve Alquist. Of course, everybody, make sure you are subscribed to Uprise RI and follow Steve across social media for some of the best daily reporting and in the moment reporting you'll find anywhere. And we're lucky to have him in Rhode Island. I literally just had this pulled up and I wanted to make sure I had the exact, hold on. I just want to make sure I have it exactly right as I read this to you here. Breaking in these last few moments, a Boston Globe Suffolk University poll for the Democratic primary for governor. Nelly Gorbea taking the lead at 24%. Governor McKee, 20%. Helena Folks, big jump to 16%. Whoa. And then Matt Brown, 5%. Dr. Munoz, 1%. Your take on that?
Well, last night I was at the Democratic Party endorsement committee meeting, and McKee won that vote last night from the state Democrats, 88 to 70 something or so. It was like in the high 80s to high 70s.
Yeah.
So he beat Gorbea out there. But this polling, I think, shows that the endorsement doesn't carry as much weight as people would hope. And I think this polling makes sense to me. We'll see what happens down the road. I know Matt and Dr. Munoz still want to make their case. And I think I'll tell you this, when they had the recent debate or meet and greet at the Jewish, the one for the poverty.
Yeah, the Jewish Alliance over there.
Thank you, Jewish Alliance, right. Yep. When they did that, when I talked to people who had no idea what any of these candidates stood for, really, Matt Brown and Dr. Munoz did better with people. Right.
No question. They were without question. I even did a full podcast episode on that, how they justified to any haters or anybody who questions why they're in the race. They justified why they're there with the specific answers they were able to give that day.
I thought so, too. And but the thing, you know, it's interesting. I have not talked to anybody who didn't think that they head and shoulders carried that debate. Right. Head and shoulders. Right. So I think they need to make their case. They need to get out there and make their case if they want to have stronger numbers. I'll say this in favor of Nelly Gorbea. She has the most open office in the entire state house. Whenever I have an issue that I have to bring to the Secretary of State's office, her office is dynamite. I don't know if it's her or the people she hired, but that's a good sign, right? As governor, maybe it would be the most open office that we've had in, you know, 12 years, right? So I've never had this kind of access before. So I look forward to an open administration if she were to win. And I've been working better with McKee, but oftentimes, and I'm going to say this, and it might sound biased, but oftentimes I bring questions to McKee and I don't know that he understands them or that he appreciates the issues in a very deep way. And I think that's too bad sometimes. So I would wish that he was a little bit more on the ball for certain things. I also have a slight fear, and I think many progressives feel this way too, that once he's elected and no longer just the guy who sort of stumbled into that position, he may start to move more seriously to the right on many, many issues. You know, if you remember early on, he showed some hesitancy in signing the Act on Climate legislation.
Yep.
And it was only because there was a lot of pressure brought to bear. And I think he thought, oh, I do want to be governor, you know, for another 4 years, that I think he really pushed hard to, I think he sign that legislation on a 50-50. It could go either way, but the Northern Rhode Island Chamber of Commerce did not want him to sign it. But if he had was sure to be governor for four more years, and maybe he would have signed it and said, I'll weather it down the road, or not signed it and say, I'll weather the fallout. So we might see a more right-wing McKee come out of this. That's my analysis.
Steve Alquist, he is behind the outstanding website, Uprise Rhode Island, across social media, and one of the most visible reporters at the State House and at community events. In fact, I think I'll probably see you at the State House pretty shortly for the budget signing. Yeah. I'm not sure if you'll be there. So,
One more thing I want to say. I'm having a fundraiser at Riff Raff Bookstore on Thursday night, if it's okay to say that.
It's definitely okay. Yeah.
All right, absolutely. Cool. Thursday night, Riff Raff, like 7 o'clock-ish, I'll be there. We're having drinks and food, and just like I'll be answering questions from the audience, and it should be a lot of fun.
I look forward
to it. Come on down if you're interested.
Awesome. All right. All right. Steve Alquist, thanks as always. See you in a bit.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.